Totally Football Show. Today, putting the ow into Carabao, it's a Manchester meltdown special. Mourinho slams second captain's form, many of their listeners agree, then has midweek clash with midfield star who used to play for him, and then another next morning at training. What will happen next as United travel to West Ham this weekend? And what of Liverpool-Chelsea and the rest of the midweek League Cup action, where almost all the goals were better than the stupid one they chose for the Puskas Award? These questions and more in this Totally Football Show. Featuring Oliver Cheatham with Make Love. And you know why we're playing that song, Tom Williams?
No, I don't.
All right, you'll find out later on. Tom Williams, who is the author of Do You Speak Football? And the answer very much yes.
Yes, it is.
All right.
I was just waiting to see whether that was building up to something.
Right,
more.
No.
Yes.
Also here, speaking about the beautiful game. We have Duncan Alexander.
Hello.
And Michael Cox.
Hi, James.
Fresh from their star turns at the Totally Football Live last Monday at the South Bank Centre. We had a great time, everybody. Thank you all for coming.
There was one guy who I spoke to at the end who'd come over all the way from America.
Yes.
Specifically.
Yeah, physically.
Wow.
Which is genuinely impressive. Great effort.
Yeah. Yeah, he was from Washington, D.C., and, you know, we'd love to return the favour. Just got to sort that one out. But, yeah, thanks for everyone who made the journey, however short, to the Queen Elizabeth Hall. A lot of people, Duncan, remarking on your resemblance to Manuel Almunia.
Mm.
But an Almunia with a laptop.
Yep.
Yep.
I didn't have a laptop there, to be fair.
All right.
I do sometimes use one. Yeah.
There you go.
He's got a laptop now, listeners.
He certainly has.
If that helps paint the picture.
Come on, don't spoil it.
I think the other talking point was the fact that, Michael, not only have you not seen The Matrix still, but you don't like Queen.
Wow.
And that winning tweet about if you don't like Queen and you've never seen The Matrix, is this the real life? Is this just fantasy?
That was very funny.
Yeah.
Well done.
Anyway, I like to party. Everybody does. And I certainly got my share of throws and spills midweek. Wow, what a lot going on. There were goals, great goals. Wow, that was that whole Pogba Moo thing. So fans of rubbernecking were in for a treat. Let's begin with the entire Man United saga, League Cup action and Carrington meltdowns after this.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
So, the big news Tuesday night, Man United knocked out of the League Cup by Derby. League Cup, which Mourinho says is a small competition, having shrunk since he was so excited about winning it two seasons ago. And then the Pogba fight, Mourinho kind of kicking this one off by announcing to the world that he was never going to make Pogba his second captain again, which was a curious move. Duncan?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think second captain is much of a thing in English football, really. I mean, vice-captain generally is someone that, you know, goes around before the game and, you know, shakes hands with dignitaries, really. So,
right.
Yeah.
But even if it is a thing in Mourinho's mind, it was interesting that he chose to publicly say, he let me down. I think why? Because he'd made those comments about attack, attack, attack after the Wolves game. Is that right, Tom?
Yes, that's the assumption. Pogba said that he thought United should be more attacking at home, and when he was asked why they weren't, he said, well, don't ask me, I'm just a player. And it feels like Mourinho has used this vice-captaincy, which, as Duncan was saying, does not really mean anything, as a means of punishing Pogba, but in a way that doesn't really mean all that much. It has a lot more symbolic value than it does punitive value. But again, just a sign of the lack of feeling between the two of them,
right.
And then this latest peculiar flare up in training on Wednesday, just adding to that.
Right, and before that, Tuesday night, the exit against Frank Lampard's Derby. Quite a match, this, Michael.
It was very entertaining. I mean, Derby were impressive. I think Lampard maybe will be a little bit disappointed Derby didn't see out the game in 90 minutes, really, because they were the better side. You know, after Romero sending off, they were particularly dominant. And, you know, it was a classic plan B of Fellaini that got United a chance to win it in penalties, but they didn't win it. Really impressive from Derby. I think, you know, technically they look very good. They push forward in numbers, but there was just a sense that they weren't at all overawed by the occasion. They really, you know, from the outset played good football, and it was good to see, you know, someone who hadn't seen Derby previously this season. They looked excellent.
Have you seen much of Derby this season, Tom?
No.
Harry Wilson, for example, beyond the extraordinary free kick.
Wales is Harry Wilson.
What can you tell us about him?
He made his Wales debut early this year in the China Cup. He's on loan at Derby from Liverpool. Scores an absolutely sensational free kick, which brought to mind that famous Cristiano Ronaldo goal at the same end of the ground against Portsmouth, whenever that was, and then runs off celebrating with the old five-finger gesture for each of Liverpool's five European Cups, just to rub it in that little bit more.
Right, because he's on loan from Liverpool.
Because he's on loan from Liverpool.
Right. Now, the free kick itself was special because it was so far out, and the kind of knuckleball thing, which made it kind of fade and dip, because Romero just stands and watches it. Why? Because he thinks it's flying over the top.
Well, yeah, well, it starts, Wilson hits it left-footed, and it starts off going towards the right-hand side of the goal and then just veers left. And yeah, it was good. And it was, as Tom said, very reminiscent of that Ronaldo one from pretty much the same spot.
Right.
And I guess, you know, obviously he's on loan from Liverpool. They've got Mason Mount on loan from Chelsea. It's kind of classic football league in the sense you can build a good team, but often it is built on, you know, loans and a bit sort of short-termism. But, you know, that's not going to bother Derby fans after that result.
Right.
They ended up with obviously two goals, which was 10% of the total they managed in their last Premier League season. So that famous, dreadful 2007-08.
I didn't think it was reminiscent of Ronaldo's, actually.
Okay.
I thought it was a completely different free kick. I thought Ronaldo's was all about the dip over the wall, whereas this one was about the kind of reverse swing.
Okay, but there was also a big dip at the end, wasn't there?
A little bit of dip. But if you look at Romero, I think it's interesting because he takes two steps to the other side. So he's not anticipating the shot. He's reacting to where the ball's going and gets completely wrong-footed. And I think that's why it's so spectacular.
Right. And then Marriott with the goal, with the goal to move into the lead in about, what, 85th, 86th minute. But Fellaini, as you mentioned, pretty much the last second of the 90, ties it up. Will Frost says, is Fellaini now United's best and most crucial player?
Well, probably not. No, I'd still say Lukaku and even Pogba, despite
Lukaku
his
missed a lot of chances, as Mourinho was pointing out, to seal the kill game off.
I mean, Lukaku does miss chances. He is one of those players. He gets a lot of chances and he scores a lot and misses a lot. I think you've got to accept that. I found it funny in the summer when United gave Fellaini a new deal, and a lot of Manchester United fans were, you know, objecting to this kind of player because he doesn't, you know, fit into United's philosophies and their tradition of you know, playing football. But if there's one thing I associate with Manchester United, it's playing quite badly and scoring a last-minute equaliser or a last-minute winner. And Fellaini's probably the best player in the Premier League at doing that. So I think he fits into their philosophy very nicely.
Very nice. And of course, although they did go out of the Cup, they weren't beaten, it's important to point out.
That is true. They drew the game.
That was a drawn game. It was also good. We saw the spectacle of Lee Grant and Scott Carson contesting a penalty shootout at Old Trafford, and it wasn't some sort of charity game, which I thought was, you know, times have changed. Things have moved on.
Right. Well, some things don't change, though. United losing the penalty shootout. That's the fifth shootout in a row that they've been defeated at. And Mourinho, of course, saw it coming because, once again, he chose to share his thoughts with the media by saying once it reached 6-6, he knew we were in trouble with Jones and Bailey next on the list.
Well, it was a really high-quality penalty shootout. I think that was the thing that stood out. I mean, all the penalties that went in were brilliant. And then Phil Jones steps up, and I think everyone in the ground and everyone watching on TV thinks, right, if any United player is not going to score, it'll be Phil Jones.
Right.
And then Mourinho comes out after the game and confirms that he was thinking the same thing, and that had Jones not failed to score by...
control over it.
But yeah, I mean, poor guy. What can he do?
I feel... this is a weird week, because I actually genuinely feel quite sorry for Mourinho. But part of that is because of what happened then the following morning at Carrington with this little exchange with Pogba, and Pogba visibly hamming it up for the cameras. I think that's fair. I think he was aware that the whole incident was going to be filmed. Interesting. Well, where does it all leave the odd couple? What is the atmosphere now like at Man United? Let's find out by talking to the man who's keeping American readers across every aspect of this top story. It is Rory Smith of the New York Times. Rory.
Hello.
Hello. Are you live at Carrington?
I'm not live at Carrington, no. I'm not Sky Sports News.
Okay.
I'm not standing watching the players go in and out in their fancy cars.
What can you tell us, Rory, about the latest?
Well, it seems to be kind of another reprise of this endless soap opera between Mourinho and Pogba, where they've fallen out essentially because Pogba was in a box during the Derby game. He tried to upload a video to one of his social media accounts. It didn't upload at the time, so by the time it did kind of make it online, anyone who's ever used Wi-Fi at Old Trafford will understand this problem. It was after the game, United had lost, so it obviously looked like Pogba was laughing at United losing, or was in some way reveling in despite their defeat. Mourinho took exception, and the footage that we saw yesterday on Wednesday was of part of the exchange that they had, where they sort of thrashed out what had actually happened. As far as I know, Pogba kind of explained it. Mourinho accepted that it was an honest mistake and moved on. But the fact that it had such resonance is a kind of a reflection of the media landscape in which we live and the kind of the resonance that Manchester United itself has, but also just how easily United at the moment kind of tumble into something that looks a bit like crisis, which is not the mark of a healthy club. And I think that you can, as Mourinho no doubt would, you can kind of say, well, look, this is a media invention and it's because the media are overplaying everything and there's so much hyperbole and so much hysteria. And that's all true to an extent, I think. Pogba's not really helped the situation. He does have this habit, and you have to assume it's deliberate, of kind of stoking the fires every so often, whether it's the thing about attack, that, you know, United should attack at home. He's smart enough to know how that will be perceived. He's not stupid. He's not kind of new to this environment. He understands that if he says something like that, there is a chance it will be interpreted in a certain way. And that is why, and as strange as it is for a journalist to complain about it, that's why most players watch what they say a little bit. And if they're being open, that's praiseworthy to one extent. But at the same time, they understand what the consequences will be. And Pogba's done it so often now this season. You have to assume he knows he's doing it and he's doing it on purpose. That tends to only end one way.
Yeah. And do you think that Pogba and Mourinho will be working together past Christmas?
I have a feeling that they will see out the season together. I don't think it would work for United to sell Pogba in January, and I don't think there's any appetite to sack Mourinho. Obviously, if results go really sour, then the manager's always vulnerable. But as things stand, I would expect them to see out the season. The problem that Pogba's got is I'm not quite sure where the market is for him. It's all very well thinking I can go and play for Barcelona, but I don't think Barcelona have got the money that it would take to get him out of Manchester United. I'm not sure anyone other than maybe PSG, who have been hit by FFP, I'm not sure that anyone's got the money to take Pogba away from United. So whether he's playing a waiting game and thinking, I will get a better contract when Jose goes, that may well be what his end game is. But as things stand, it's going to be a fairly tricky year for both of them. And we will have more moments like this where little things are blown out of proportion because United are never far away from a crisis.
Rory Smith, who you can see on stage with us next Friday at the Royal Northern College of Music, ManchesterPodcastFestival.com for tickets, and just put in Totally Football Live. Part of the Manchester Podcast Festival, of course. Right. Tom, you were suggesting that Moo might not have been entirely innocent in this whole kind of media crisis that they had Wednesday morning. Was it to stop people talking about the fact that Derby went through instead of them?
It would be the first time that he'd engineered a situation right. to draw attention away from a bad result. And I think the fact that when Pogba appears on the training pitch, Mourinho's got his back to the camera, which he must know is there. It felt like the sort of orchestrated thing that Ooh. Mourinho does.
Well, let's fox his plan by talking about Derby anyway. Frank Lampard, clearly a genius manager in this his debut season.
He's looking good. They outpassed Manchester United at Old Trafford, which not a lot of teams do, partly because United were so bad. 76% is kind of lower championship level. But yeah, they looked, you know, they obviously Lampard's instilled a way of playing with them that's working well. And yeah, it's good to see.
Yeah, Mason Mount caught the eye on loan from Chelsea after a very impressive season on loan at Vitesse Arnhem last season. I think he scored about 14 goals from midfield, which is pretty impressive for a young player playing in a foreign league. And yeah, he was very good on the ball. I like the fact he looked for quite inventive passing angles. You get a lot of young midfielders and you almost get the impression they're thinking about their passing stats as the game goes on, whereas Mount was making a lot of quite risky forward passes but finding people. It was his shot that led to the Jack Marriott goal that put them ahead. Right. So yeah, impressive.
Name a player who you think is calculating his stats as he selects his passing options.
I'm not sure I'd like to name names,
but you do
hear about players in the game who will go back into the changing room after the match and will ask the stats man, oh, you know, how are my pass completion stats today?
Michael, you'll name names, won't you?
Well, no, I think Duncan's pointing at me because I played in an Opta game last year where, you know, it was an 11-a-side game and they measured all our passes. And I realised at half time my pass completion rate was just under 50% and spent the second half ensuring I got above that magic mark.
There you Brilliant. Go. There's your example right there.
Some microcock.
The selfishness that's killing football.
Well, West Ham up next for Man United. West Ham, who are fresh from an 8-0 victory against the bottom team in the Football League, Macclesfield. But still, a West Ham team were winless in the last three Premier League games at home this season, but who did hold Chelsea to a 0-0 draw last weekend, and to be fair, could easily have won that game. Michael, what do you think about the Hammers' chances here?
Well, they're very good against Chelsea, despite the fact they didn't have Marko Arnautovic up front, and I think he's the key factor if he returns, as I believe he's in line to do so.
Right.
His movement on the shoulder of the last defenders is just fantastic, and they do have players who can play the passes for him in that side, West Ham. So, you know, United, I still think, are very unconvincing at centre-back this year, or this season, I should say. And, I fancy West Ham to get a result here. Maybe not all 3 points, but I'd fancy them to get a draw.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've spoken about this on previous pods, but that they signed a lot of players, West Ham, over the summer. And there was a feeling in those opening games that Pellegrini didn't really know how to fit them all together. They've looked a bit more settled in recent weeks. I think in midfield, particularly, you've had Mark Noble, Declan Rice and Pedro Obiang. And that's quite a nice balanced three rather than the Wilshere Noble axis of doom that we saw in the first few games of the season. They had that really impressive win at Everton, which a lot of people didn't see coming. As Michael was saying, they were quite impressive against Chelsea and shut Chelsea down quite effectively, the first team to do so this season.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just put 8 goals past Macclesfield. So they'll be full
There's
of beans.
No easy games against Macclesfield. Well, there are actually, like this one. But for fans of omens, like might like to remember that West Ham effectively ended the Van Gaal regime at United by beating them and stopping them qualifying for the Champions League in the last ever game at Upton Park, which culminated with Matthew Etherington coming on the pitch in a taxi. Don't know, can't guarantee that will happen this weekend, but, you know, let's hope it does.
Refresh our memories as to why that happened.
Because they were celebrating the end of Upton Park and they were bringing on some legends in a black cab. And one
oh,
of them
right,
was,
as a kind of London...
Yeah, like okay. We're in London, the stadium's in London.
Right. Here, and Dave Bautista came over the roof on a BMX bike or something.
Yeah.
Right.
It went on really late as well, didn't it? Because the game was delayed by about an hour because of some crowd congestion.
Yeah.
So there was just loads of people still in Upton Park at midnight watching, you know, the West Ham legends from the 60s coming on in hackney carriages.
Naturally, Mourinho has insulted previously two of the key figures in this game, calling Pellegrini Pellegrino. And Pellegrini's not a fan of Mourinho. He's made some comments about him. Mourinho said of Arnautovic that he has the mentality of a child, which I think is quite positive, but I don't think Jose meant it that way. And he called him unmanageable as well. And gave him a watch because he was late to training. Again, you could read that in a positive light if, you know, you weren't part of the biased anti-Moo agenda.
To be fair, I've definitely mixed up Manuel Pellegrini, Mauricio Pellegrino and right. Mauricio Pochettino before.
Which one is at West Ham?
Pellegrini.
Right. There we go. After this game, Man United will be facing Valencia and then Newcastle. And then they got the international break. Then Chelsea, Juventus and Everton. Wow. Eh? There's plenty of gas left in this explosion, methinks. Here we are anyway. We've got, what, 2 parts in and we haven't even got to the big game of midweek yet. So let's do that after another break. He lines up to hit it and yes, it's deflected for a corner. That's over 12 corners. Yes. No time to take it though. It's finished 0-0. What a result.
Sorry, our fault. You see, with same game multibets from Paddy Power, you can combine multiple selections from one match into one bet and you'll get money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold same game multibet lets you down. Paddy Power. Enough of the nonsense. Applies to pre-match fourfold same game multibets on UK and top European leagues. Max free bet £10 per customer per day. Minimum odds. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Chelsea-Liverpool facing each other on Saturday. What a game it's set to be. Two most credible rivals for Man City, two most expensive keepers in the world and arguably the two best players in the Premier League going head-to-head, Hazard and Milner. I mean, we laughed, but yeah. Right, anyway, we got a massive preview to the weekend's action on Wednesday night when Liverpool hosted Chelsea in the League Cup. And what a special game. At least two goals that were better than the Salah one, which won the Puskás Award, Tom.
Yes, particularly the Hazard goal.
Right. First of all, you had Sturridge, who'd missed an absolute sitter early doors, but then contrived to kind of fling his body in the right direction. And was that an equaliser, that one? I get confused.
That put them in the lead.
And then Eden Hazard, as you're saying, Tom.
Yeah, wonderful goal. And it'd been quite an interesting game up to that point in that Chelsea started more brightly than Liverpool. We're not really used to seeing that happen with Liverpool, certainly this season. It seemed to take Liverpool a bit of time to get their press in order. But then they finished the half quite strongly. Sturridge puts them ahead. I didn't really see Chelsea getting a foothold in the game until Hazard came on. He takes the free kick that leads to the equaliser, scored by Emerson, and then scores this absolutely sensational goal with 5 minutes to go.
Yeah.
Picks it up sort of midway inside the Liverpool half. Nutmegs Firmino with a pass out to Azpilicueta. Gets it back.
Yep.
Shrugs off Naby Keita. Drives between Keita and Moreno. And then back outside Moreno, nutmegging him.
Nutmegging him, yeah. So
and then
he
crashes
beats
it past Mignolet.
I think three players in the first passage before he lays it off. And then another two players and two nutmegs in the whole move. And then beats the keeper.
Wonderful. There's been talk on Twitter as to whether that was his greatest ever goal.
I can't think of a better. Can you think of a better one?
Well, he scored a similar one in a way from the other side against Liverpool a couple of seasons ago, which I really liked because it was so casual. This one was a very powerful, direct run, whereas the previous one was... He was almost dribbling slowly. He just kind of casually wandered past everyone and slotted it in the far corner without too much fuss, which I really liked because it kind of sums him up. I think he's just quite a cool, you know... He's not a passionate player, I'd say, Hazard. He kind of just does things because he fancies it.
Right.
He scored a great goal at Lille when he was just breaking into the team against Genoa in the Europa League. Picks the ball up in his own half, out on the left, and then sort of drifts right across the pitch into the penalty area and tucks it away. But yeah, I think I'd probably put that Liverpool goal at the top of his collection.
Certainly his form consistently seems to be at a higher level than... It's been from perhaps possibly ever.
Yeah, I mean, he's won 15 of his last 17 games for club and country. He's already, you know, got as many goals as he did in that season when 2015-16, when he didn't look too enamoured with the Moo regime at Chelsea. And yeah, he was absolutely brilliant. I think for Liverpool's point of view, Klopp was clearly unhappy with Shaqiri at the end of the game because just before the free kick that Chelsea won to equalise, Shaqiri kind of semi-dived at the other end of the pitch when he could have had a shot, and then play went up the other end and obviously Chelsea equalised soon after. So, and Klopp made a point of going on the pitch at the end and kind of lecturing Shaqiri.
Oh, right. OK, well, it was Liverpool's first defeat in any competition of the season. They're going to be at Stamford Bridge taking on Chelsea again on Saturday. How much of a guide is what happened on Wednesday, Michael?
No, I don't think it much of a guide at all. I think maybe there'll be five or six players who play in both games. So I think it'll be a completely different game. But it's funny because there was a point where we seemed to have Liverpool-Chelsea about five times a season, 3 or 4 years in a row when Mourinho and Benitez were there. And you kind of just sighed in despair at the, you know, prospect of having to watch yet another 1-0 or 0-0. Whereas this time, along with City, the most entertaining sides in the Premier League, I'm really looking forward to Saturday. I think it should be an even better game than this one.
Well, even better than this one. All right. Who do you fancy for this? How much impact does it have on the title race? And if Hazard remains in this form, can anyone stop Chelsea?
I think it'd be a good test for Chelsea. As Michael said, you know, that we expect the teams to be quite different. And I think we saw in that game at West Ham that Chelsea... you know, can be stopped, and that if you allow Jorginho to have the ball but prevent him from passing to anyone, you can actually shut them down. So I think that's given an indication as to how to go up against them. And it might actually serve Liverpool to have lost this game in midweek, in that, you know, if there had been any complacency, not that I'm sure there would have been, but, you know, there is that desire to go back and kind of avenge that defeat. So, I think I'd probably go for a draw.
Right. Stopping Jorginho is key, though.
Well, in a way, I'm not sure West Ham necessarily stopped Jorginho. They just allowed him to have the ball but made sure he couldn't pass to anyone.
Right.
And I think there were those stats about how many passes he'd attempted or completed and breaking the record, but actually didn't really do all that much with it.
I'd fancy Liverpool just because I think the left side of Chelsea's defence, there's a concern there. Alonso's been incredible in terms of goals and assists, but I worry about him defensively. The left side of the centre-back pairing, I just don't like David Luiz in a back four. I thought he was really poor against West Ham, shrugged off the ball too easily. And Liverpool are so good at combining down that flank with Firmino's clever positioning. And of course, Salah, who I don't think has hit top form so far this season. His shooting's been quite wayward, but I think they'll cause real problems, Liverpool.
All right.
And also Alexander-Arnold with his those whippy crosses and whippy passes that he likes putting in.
Rest of the League Cup. Duncan, should we fly through a quick roundup of the other things that happened? Arsenal, their B team beat the B team.
Yeah. The best thing that came out of this was the fact that Brentford captain Nico Yanaris was a mascot for Arsenal when he was seven.
Really?
And Mike Dean was the ref in that game, and he was the ref in this week's League Cup game as well.
Wow.
So Mike Dean is immortal, essentially.
Yeah. Leicester went through on penalties after a goalless draw with Wolves. Penalties as well for Spurs up at MK Dons taking on Watford with Ali the hero, Dele Ali the hero, on his return to his boyhood club, etc.
Yeah, that was quite a nice story from an otherwise slightly peculiar game. And Gazzaniga made two good penalty saves, so I think he's probably nailed down the backup role because, you know, Michel Vorm made those two errors against Liverpool and Gazzaniga's done quite well.
What do you think of penalties after 90 minutes?
I think it's probably a good thing in the League Cup, to be honest. And, you know, it's interesting because almost every team seems to play their reserve goalkeeper now. So it's almost like if you want your reserve goalkeeper to have any quality, make him a penalty-saving specialist. Because, you know, Caballero won the tournament for City a couple of years ago. You know, Ben Foster going back a few years for Manchester United. So added likelihood of penalties means you need a good keeper that can save him.
Yeah, Danny Ward, for example, in that Leicester-Wolves game, was it three penalties in that? Be nice if he could get a regular run in the team. Elsewhere, Man City certainly didn't need penalties, did they, against Oxford United?
No, Phil Foden starred. He got the perfect trio of a pre-assist, a second assist, and a normal assist, and then his first ever goal.
Right.
Club. Yeah.
He was just one XG short of the perfect game.
Well, I think it was
He did have an XG as well, didn't he? He had an early chance which he didn't put away.
Yeah, it was a nice tribute to Oxford's three-sided ground, I thought, as well.
A lot of excitement about Phil Foden. Carl Robinson, the U's manager, saying his feet are to die for. He reminds me of Iniesta. So there's that. Even younger than Phil Foden is Harvey Elliott, the 15-year-old Tom Williams, 15 years old, who came on in Fulham's 3-1 win at Millwall. 81st minute, he was taking exams at school on Tuesday morning. He was back at school on Wednesday, and he probably played Fortnite when he got home after the game as well.
There's always exams involved, aren't there?
Yeah.
When there's a young
what exams,
15 years old.
What exams are they in September? Is he doing resits?
It's a good question, Michael. I just read that and went, oh, exams. But you're absolutely right. There's
could be
no business
taking.
I think
he needs to do less of the football, more of the study.
he's slightly younger than the London congestion charge, which Fulham residents particularly fight against. And he's just slightly older than the first of a cloned horse.
Really?
I think that horse might have died. I'm not sure,
okay.
But yeah, that's good.
And he is exactly the same age as that track we played at the start, Make Love being number one. Elsewhere, Palace beat West Brom 3-0. A lot of excitement about Andros Townsend and Max Meyer, who I'd completely forgotten about being part of.
Andros Townsend scored a lovely goal. A very Andros Townsend lovely goal. Came from the right.
From that area of the pitch he always shoots from.
Yeah.
Burnley lost to Burton and Nottingham Forest beat Stoke 3-2.
Yes, I had sort of half an eye on that Forest-Stoke game, and Charlie Adam tried to score from the halfway line again, as he famously did at Stamford Bridge a few years back. Ended up going a few yards wide. It made me think you don't get many players scoring from the halfway line twice. Xabi Alonso, one example, with Liverpool, although one was into an open goal after the keeper had gone out, which I think invalidates it slightly.
Quietly, I'm going to...
From the actual halfway line, though? Or from sort of halfway?
Near or nearabouts.
Yeah.
I think Inigo Martinez of Real Sociedad, Xabi Alonso's fellow Basque, has done it maybe three times.
Wow, there you go.
Wow. Okay.
A Basque thing.
But Charlie Adam didn't.
He didn't, no.
Right.
No.
Okay. And Saïda Berahino continued his goal-scoring run, sort of.
Yeah, he scored...
He fell over.
He kind of sat on the ball and then scored, which you don't see much.
Again. Yeah,
And then missed a point-blank header in the last minute.
Right. As Stoke crashed out of the League Cup. All right, well, the draw for the next round is on Saturday, and I, for one, am looking forward to it because what a treat that midweek round was. Anyway, for all of that, we've got some incredibly exciting matches on the way in the Premier League, and we'll be chatting about that after a little interlude with our continental chums after this.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at roytheroversofficial.com.
It was a busy midweek in Europe as well, Michael, because there were full midweek rounds all over the shop. Italy, certainly, building up to what's going to be a couple of huge games on Saturday. Roma taking on Lazio. Both teams had big wins on Wednesday. Roma beating Frosinone 4-0. Remarkably here. Do you remember that Javier Pastore back heel goal against Atalanta way back in week one, I think, of the season?
Yep.
Well, he'd been out injured. He came back into the side yesterday and he did almost the exact same goal. This one, arguably, even more difficult. This was against, as I say, Frosinone. And whereas the other one was kind of like a daisy cutter pass to him, it was like, you know, a nice simple pass on the ground that he just slots, back heels it into the Atalanta goal. This time, it was kind of almost a volleyed pass that he puts away. Very impressive. Anyway, Roma needing a victory after a difficult couple of results will take on a Lazio side who also won midweek. The other big game, Juve taking on Napoli. They both had fine victories. Juve beating their former star Pippo Inzaghi's Bologna 2-0. Napoli winning 3-0 against Parma. Napoli 3 points behind Juve at the top of the table. They won this game at the end of last season. If they win it this time, they'll knock Cristiano Ronaldo and chums off the top of Serie A. That'll be interesting. The other quick bit of Italian news, Berlusconi's move to take over Monza has gone through now. The third division club is now very much property of Berlusca. So fascinating to see what he's going to do with them.
They once played Wickham in the Anglo-Italian Cup for Monza. Amateur teams, yeah, back right. In the 80s.
They once were the ownership, they once were the property of Clarence Seedorf as well, about 10 years ago, and he kind of drove them into bankruptcy after fielding his brother, Cedric Seedorf, it says here. Apparently that's how you spell it. Anyway.
Drove them is a good pun for Monza. Yeah. I'm not sure if he meant
it. Oh, yeah, no, I didn't mean that. Yeah. All right, nice. Gavin says, you've been talking about beautiful goals on Monday. Can you take a moment to appreciate what Villarreal's Pablo Fornals has done against Bilbao? Did you see this?
Was this trickery in the corner?
No.
It was the lob.
So basically, I think it's somebody, possibly the goalkeeper, hoofs it upfield. It takes one bounce around the halfway line and then a player knocks it to Fornals. So that's a kind of the second bounce. And then with that, he puts it straight with an equivalently large kick to the one the goalkeeper had had. He puts it straight into the other net. So it basically goes from net, bounce, bounce, net. That was quite nice.
Very nice, yeah. Reminiscent of a goal that Luis Suarez scored against Norwich at Anfield a few years ago when he scored this incredible hat-trick. And one of them was a sort of 40-yard lob from like the inside left channel. So if you haven't seen the Villarreal goal, just imagine Suarez's goal, but in like Villarreal colours.
Brilliant.
Or just look up the Villarreal goal. Probably
you could do that as well. Yeah, in Spain, both Real Madrid and Barcelona lost, intriguingly.
First time since January 2015 they've lost on the same day.
Really?
Mm.
Interesting. Real Madrid losing at Sevilla. Ben Yedder, how many goals did he get?
I think he got two.
Two? Do you know that 7 of his last 9 shots on target have been goals?
That's excellent work.
It is, yeah. Barcelona, meanwhile, lost 2-1 against a Leganés side who possibly were bottom of the table coming into this.
I think they were.
They'd yet to win a game under their manager, who is Mauricio Pellegrino. Yeah.
It's really shaken up the La Liga table now because you've got Barcelona and Real Madrid joint top and Atletico Madrid third. So crazy stuff happening in Spain.
Well, that could all get shaken up even further this Saturday when the Madrid derby happens. Boy, Saturday's going to be busy, isn't it?
Very busy, and Sunday's very not busy.
Oh, all right. Well, that's where we can have a bit of a hangover to the next day's action. In France, did you have a midweek round in France, Tom?
Yes, they did.
Right.
Hold the back page. PSG won again.
Right.
7 wins in a row. The first time they've started the season with 7 consecutive wins.
Well, you say in a row, Tom.
Wins.
You say in a row, but I recall them losing spectacularly at Anfield last week.
Yeah, 7 wins in a row in the league.
Yeah. What was the reaction in France to the Anfield debacle?
It was similar to the reaction when they went out of the Champions League last season.
Right.
This sense that it doesn't really matter how many goals you put past your Angers and your Dijons and the rest of it if you keep getting shown up in Europe. And I think the really striking thing about that Liverpool game was just the complete absence of any sort of strategy. And right. that they looked as uninspired as they had when they went out to Real Madrid last season.
I really want to believe that the French media and indeed public talk about les Angers et les Dijon.
And that perhaps not that exact phrasing, but along those lines.
I'm sure they do. Equally, how excited were the French press and public about Lyon's win over Man City?
Yeah, massive win. Massive win. I mean, Lyon have got decent European pedigree. I mean, you think about that run of seven straight Ligue 1 wins in the first decade of the current century. And, you know, they beat Real Madrid a handful of times and, you know, they reached the semi-finals in 2010. But they've not done anything of note in the Champions League since then. And no one saw it coming. They'd started the season quite slowly. Bruno Genesio, their coach, gets a lot of flack from Lyon's fans who've never really taken to him. It came out of nowhere. And they've built on that quite impressively. They went and won against Marseille, one of their big rivals for Champions League qualification, and then won again last night at Dijon. Moussa Dembele scoring his first two goals since arriving from Celtic. So they're actually looking quite good, Lyon.
Nice one. The big game this weekend in France is Nice against Paris Saint-Germain. Any chance that they're going to end the Parisians' winning run? And how is Pat Vieira getting on down there?
Things are looking better. He didn't start the season very well. And then they had an impressive win over Lyon, where they sort of changed tack, went to a back three. And he started using Alain Saint-Maximin alongside or in support of Mario Balotelli. And Saint-Maximin's been brilliant the last few games. They won in midweek at Nantes. So looking good. Obviously, PSG big favourites. And if they win PSG, they will equal the record of 8 wins at the start of a Ligue 1 season set by Olympique Lillois in 1936. Should also probably mention Monaco, who lost at home to Angers. I caught a bit of the second half. Absolutely wretched game. Half empty ground, dreadful pitch. Monaco didn't have a single shot on target in the entire game and are now 18th and in the relegation playoff place. Their worst start to a season since 2006-07. And obviously we know that Monaco have got this business model where every summer they sell a lot of their best players, they reinvest, and it's worked for them the last few seasons. I mean, they won the league in 2017 in really impressive fashion, sold a bunch of players, Mbappe, Benjamin Mendy, Bernardo Silva, and produced a good season last season, finishing second to PSG. But there's a feeling that this summer just gone, they've perhaps gone a little bit too far. Leonardo Jardim, the coach, has said this is going to be the most difficult season. They've had a lot of injuries. But I mean, the team they put out against Angers, they were almost full strength.
Right.
You had, like Nasser Chadli was in there, who's like one of their big money new signings. And they were dreadful again. So they are in trouble.
Right. And, the question would be, who are they going to sell this summer if the players are all so badly?
Yeah.
Magnus Strömblad, there you go. That answers your question. How severe is the Monaco crisis?
Fairly severe, I'd say.
Okay, if you want more continental talk, of course, Golazzo is out there right now with an edition which kind of looks forward to the big games of the weekend, but also spends an inordinate amount of time telling funny stories about a guy called Luciano Gauci, so that's nice. Anyway, let's talk about the Premier League, Tom.
That's
many exciting games to look at. Which ones? What's most exciting you about this weekend, apart from Chelsea-Liverpool, Duncan?
Arsenal Watford, I think, is going to be good.
The Troy Deeney Cojones derby.
Exactly, yeah.
Have Arsenal sufficiently grown a pair to take on Watford this time? I know they beat them after that game, didn't they?
Troy Deeney's going to have an injection to play in this game, but in his foot, I think.
Does he actually have 3 broken toes?
Apparently, yeah.
Wow. I think he might be down to 2. He was on 5 Live the other day.
Down to the bare bones.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is going to define Watford's season, this game, because if they lose, which they probably will, they will slowly drift back into mid-table and their good start will be remembered fondly, I think, by Watford fans. But if they can win, then it points to that they might actually have a good formula.
Brilliant, season defining. Arsenal have won their last 4 games in a row in the league, the last 6 in all competitions, Tom.
Yeah, and I think there were signs that the Emery ball, if we're going to call it that, is starting to take hold. I mean, you saw the second goal they scored against Brentford was a perfect illustration of the sort of football he wants them to play. It starts off with Bernd Leno, the goalkeeper, who chips it out to the right wing. They work it through midfield and it ends up with, I think, Nacho Monreal crossing for Welbeck to score. So, they are clearly evolving as Emery wants them to. Having said that, they were quite fortunate, I think, to beat Everton last weekend. Everton made most of the chances, and then sort of, you know, Lacazette puts Arsenal in front, and then they get an offside second goal. So I think that run of form that Arsenal are on is slightly flattering how well they've played, but clearly signs of progress.
When you win, when you're playing badly, well, it's a sign indeed. Of a title. Season, isn't it, really?
I'd like to see Arsenal start with Alex Iwobi, who's played very well in the two midweek games against Vorskla and Brentford. So not the highest standard of opposition, but, you know, Arsenal have been playing with Aubameyang and Ozil on the flanks, and none of them want to be on the flanks. They drift inside in different ways. Iwobi can play as a number 10, but I think of him more as a kind of direct dribbler who can go down the outside. And I think just stretching the play brings them something different. And Iwobi, I think, has probably stagnated a little bit over the last 2 years, but I think he's been fortunate that Arsenal have let go a lot of wingers. You know, Walcott's gone, also Chamberlain's gone, and they need someone in his mould.
So you would have, what, Lacazette up the middle and then Iwobi on one side and who on the other?
Well, I'd play as the number 10. I think Ramsey can either drop out or play deeper and bring in Iwobi.
Very good. Oh, Tom, this is a question we asked Duncan and Michael on Monday at the live show, but is this the season when St. Tottenham's day returns?
I mean, it could be, I suppose. I'm not convinced that it will be. I think going into this on the back of victory at Brighton and then beating Watford on penalties in the League Cup in that slightly curious game at Stadium MK. So you wonder whether they've turned a bit of a corner, Spurs. I still expect Spurs to come together and start stringing decent results together.
Okay. Michael, you were surprised the other day to notice that Huddersfield have a World Cup winner in their squad.
Yes, Eric Durham.
Yep. There you go. Did you know that?
Yes.
Let me ask you another Huddersfield question then, Tom. Do you know who their top scorer is?
No.
It's kind of a trick question in Huddersfield's case.
Well, they've only scored three goals all season. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's three of them tied on one goal: Stankovic, Billing, and Matas Jorgensen. Fascinating.
They've gone five at home without a goal, so they're closing in on Manchester City's legendary record from 2007, when City scored at home on January the 1st, and that was it.
Excellent.
No more home goals the rest of the season.
All right. Man City are taking on Brighton. Is that fairly straightforward, you say?
Yeah, I mean, they can equal Chelsea's record of 33 unbeaten games at Saturday at 3 o'clock, which is the big one that everyone is after. But it kind of just shows, it's one of those stats where, obviously, big teams at home at 3 o'clock, they're not going to be playing anyone of note, really. So, yeah, I can't see Brighton doing much in that.
Okay, here's another stat. Since the start of last season, 20 games in the Premier League have seen one side scoring five or more goals. 20 games since the start of last season. 40% of those have been involving Man City, which actually is not that surprising. It's almost surprising it's not more.
Yeah, I agree. I think the one chance for Brighton here is Anthony Knockhart, who's been playing very well. I think there's more creative responsibility with him when Pascal Gross isn't in the side, which seems to be the case at the moment. And City's left-back zone is maybe their one area of weakness. Mendy, I think, is still out. Fabian Delph was dreadful in that game against Lyon. So maybe Knockhart can have a good game, but otherwise City, strong favourites.
Right. One of the interesting tactical innovations that Pep unveiled this midweek was John Stones playing as a kind of deep midfielder.
Yeah, I think...
The Desailly role, if you will.
Yeah, he's done that a couple of times or he's been switched there midway through games. It's funny with that, because people say, oh, he's very comfortable on the ball, so he can play there, which is certainly true. But I think you have to be comfortable on the ball in different ways as a holding midfielder. The way you receive the ball is very different from how you receive it as a centre-back. But that's not to say he can't play there.
Indeed. Well, some big games coming up, especially down the bottom end. And indeed also Everton taking on Fulham, which we have a really interesting stat about coming up after this. Tom, do you know what the really interesting stat is about Everton-Fulham?
I do not know.
Duncan and Michael do, don't they?
Duncan's a stats man.
Go on, Duncan.
Well, I feel like Michael should, you know, he can have a go if you want.
No, why don't you say it together?
That would be very difficult to choreograph. Basically, Everton have won every time they've played Fulham at home in the Premier League, 13 times, which is the best 100% record of any fixture. It used to be even better, because it used to be Fulham had won every home game against Everton as well. So it was basically whoever was at home in that fixture, you know, literally mortgage your house and put it on, because but then Everton won at Fulham and some people lost their homes.
Because Fulham lost at home?
Yeah.
Wow. When the fun stops, stop, people. What's going to happen this time? Was that the same stat you had, Michael?
Yes, it was.
Okay. We should see some nice football in this, I'm thinking, no?
Fulham are certainly playing good football. I'm still waiting to see precisely what Everton are all about this season. I don't think any section of their side is complete. Maybe the attacking midfield section, but they've been very leaky defensively, partly because of chopping and changing, because of injuries. But yeah, I'd expect goals at both ends.
Okay. Although possibly not from Richarlison, who scored with each of his first three shots in the Premier League as an Everton player, but has since failed to find the back of the net with his last six. It's happening again.
It's a luxury Ricky van Wolfswinkel.
Did Ricky van Wolfswinkel do that?
He scored with his first shot on target and then never scored again.
Wow. Never scored again. I tell you who does score again, repeatedly. He absolutely will not stop ever. Alexander Mitrovic, more goals than anyone in the Football League since he joined Fulham. Five this season in the Premier League. No one scored more. Mm. Bournemouth taking on Palace. That's not until Monday, so we can skip past that. But let's have a look at Cardiff against Burnley. That's a massive game down at the bottom of the table. Hey, Tom.
Yeah, and the sort of game that Cardiff really have to win if they're going to get out of trouble. They've already played Huddersfield this season, who you expect will also be scrapping, and that finished in a fairly forgettable 0-0. And prior to last weekend, Burnley looked like the sort of team who you might worry about going to Cardiff, but then they pulled that 4-0 win over Bournemouth out of the bag. And I think, you know, as has been said, the big difficulty for Burnley has been coping with Europa League football. This will be their 14th match of the season, I think, which is twice as many as a lot of the teams they're coming up against. But that win against Bournemouth shows that perhaps things are starting to fall into place, and the fatigue that that was induced by the Europa League games is perhaps starting to become less of a factor.
Although they did have a midweek game this week, of course, and managed to lose to Burton Albion, as we mentioned, in the League Cup. This will be the first top-flight meeting between Cardiff City and Burnley since March 1962, when significantly they played out a 1-1 draw. Are Cardiff going to challenge Derby's record for fewest points?
I think this game's quite crucial for that, because if they lose this, and they probably need to decide what they're actually going to try and do this season, because they can stick with Warnock and maybe, yeah, rival the famous Derby season, or they can try and improve a bit.
So, okay.
I mean, Burnley, I have, for all their improvement last week, you know, they have still got the worst defence in terms of shots allowed. So if Cardiff are going to, you know, go free scoring, this is the time.
This is the place to do it. Newcastle also in trouble at the wrong end of the table, without any wins all season, hosting Leicester, who scored three goals on each of their past two visits to St James's. No Damari Gray for the Foxes, who left Molyneux on crutches after that game midweek. And also on Saturday at 3 o'clock, Wolves taking on Saints. Michael.
Yeah, I think this is quite an interesting game because, you know, it's only a year or so ago that there was this massive craze of back three sweeping the Premier League. And I think last weekend, the only team who played a back three was Wolves. They played a back three in every game, indeed the same 11 in every game. And the trend we saw with the back three was that basically teams played a back three if they were playing against a back three, because it was easier to copy them and mirror their formation. And I'd have Southampton as the one side who I'd say probably should be playing a back three, because they looked really good that way last season. And Hughes seems to have bowed to the supporters' demands to play two up front, which I'm not sure has really worked for them so far. So I have an inkling that Hughes will change formation to match the way Wolves are playing.
All right, Ings will be back in.
Yeah, and he's been their bright spark. I mean, I must say I was never really sure how good Ings was. You know, he was had such injury problems at Liverpool, but he's been excellent for Southampton, running in behind, stretching the play, so that's really good to see.
Excellent.
It's like a slightly better version of Shane Long, in that he performs in a similar way, but scores, basically, full stop.
Right. Wolves, though, are in terrific form, are they not?
Yeah, one defeat in eight games.
Wow.
If we're not including defeat on penalties against Leicester as a defeat, which, of course, we are not. And, yeah, I mean, coming off the back of, well, prior to that very impressive performance at Old Trafford last weekend, when they got the 1-1 draw and sort of made Man United fall apart as a consequence. So, yeah, Wolves looking good.
Excellent. All right. With that, I think it's time to get some odds. Producer Ben has been chatting to Paddy Power. Let's hear what they said.
Thank you, Jimbo. Lee Price from Paddy Power is on the line. Lee, let's talk about the weekend's game. West Ham, 8-0 of West Ham against Macclesfield. Can they do it again against beleaguered Man United? Probably not the 8-0, but beating them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, from League Two opposition to beleaguered opposition, They're 10-3 to beat United this weekend, which seems good value to me. But Mourinho's side are still odds on at 4-5.
And what about Mourinho's odds himself? It seems to be the head shaving phase.
Yeah, we're getting very close to that buzz cut. He's back to favourite in the sack race, so not all bad news for him. It's 3-1 that he goes next, and it's now hugely odds on that Pogba outlasts him, which is no real surprise.
On to Liverpool versus Chelsea then. It was 2-1 to Chelsea in the League Cup, but I have a sneaky suspicion that Liverpool, with their full team back out, might win 3-1 here.
I'm growing aware of your sneaky suspicions. They're often quite good. The odds for a 3-1 Liverpool win are 14-1, or you can get 17-2 for a repeat of the scoreline Wednesday night. But I would agree with you, Liverpool, the massive favourites here.
And tell me about the money back special that's going on.
Yeah, I think this is a generous one, but it depends on Salah's form. It's money back as a free bet if Mo Salah scores. That applies to selected markets only, pre-match singles only, max free bet £10, T&Cs apply.
And let's move on to the least super of Super Sundays in the history of Super Sundays, Cardiff versus Burnley. I'm going for 0-0 here, as I'm sure most people are. What are the odds on a red card?
Yeah, it's 11-2 for a goalless draw, but I'm hopeful there's lots of goals because two terrible defences. It's 4-1 for a red card, though. That's what gets you off. That's a normal price, I'd say.
It's also the Madrid derby this weekend. Red card in this one, please.
Yeah, the Sergio Ramos special. So we've just spoken about the 4-1 for the Cardiff-Burnley red card. A red card here is just 9-4. That's better than half the odds, so therefore more than double the chance. Quite likely.
Ha! You can find out those odds and other ones at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. 18 plus only, begambleaware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. Michael, you're back again on Monday.
Yep, see you then.
Along with Matt Davis and Daniel Story.
Lovely.
So there's that. Exciting weekend planned? I like to party, everybody does. Anybody got any exciting plans?
I'm going to see Jurassic Park at the Royal Albert Hall.
What, just the music, is it?
It's the film, backed by the Czech Philharmonic Orchestra.
All right.
So,
are you a big fan of Jurassic Park?
The Czech Philharmonic Orchestra. and I am a big fan of Jurassic Park.
Are you?
So I'm quite looking forward to that, yeah.
Did you see the most recent one?
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan of the reboot. There's right. only so many stories you can tell about dinosaurs
I'm not sure
escaping
true,
and eating people. And right. I think they probably ran out of ways of doing that in uh-huh. about the second film.
Oh, have they escaped again?
Oh, my God.
Well, the last they will, thing though. Dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're
things,
notoriously difficult to handle.
They certainly are. I'm just going to throw this out, you know, now that it's too late for anyone to take issue with it, and say that Jurassic Park, I think, is a massively overrated film. Oh. Boom.
I mean, I would come back on that, but perhaps that's a discussion for another
I think
show.
Technically it represented a massive leap forward, but the level of the realism of the graphics, I think, blinded people to how Spielberg completely wasted a glorious story. It was an incredible story. He edited it on the phone because he was busy making Schindler's List. And I think there's one shot in particular which I remember thinking, oh, you dropped the ball there. The impact tremors, you know, when it's very much, it's the Jaws moment, you know, when they're on the boat, Brody, etc., and there's the bump and you know something big is about to happen.
The water trembling in the glass
exactly,
on the back
yeah.
of the car.
And it's just a throwaway moment in Jurassic Park, whereas in Jaws, the visceral sense of dread was so real that...
Yeah,
you've probably never seen this, have you, Michael? Jurassic Park?
I think I did.
But, yeah, whatever.
It was quite a big film for the paleontology community.
Oh, right,
because
yeah.
a lot of quite forward-thinking ideas about dinosaurs were kind of brought into the mainstream.
Okay.
This idea of the connection between dinosaurs and birds,
right.
the way that the dinosaurs move in that very bird-like fashion. That was yeah. all quite cutting-edge thinking at the time it came out.
Okay, you see, that went straight over my head.
Maybe you should rewatch it.
Okay, with that in mind, I have a fresh appreciation of Jurassic Park. What do you think is the most overrated film you've ever... Of the big films, what's your most kind of... What, is there
well,
a film that you don't get
this
why
week,
people...
West Ham scored 8 for the first time since Top Gun had come out, and
right, well,
that continues to disappoint.
Yeah, although it's great in other ways, if you watch it.
There's the old Quentin Tarantino subtext, but...
Yeah, I don't think it's even sub, that text.
No.
Especially not in the sauna scene.
No.
Right. Anyway, hey, we'll talk more about this and kind of that kind of thing on Monday. Meantime, have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for being with us today. Goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And make sure you check out our other football podcasts, the revamped Totally Football League Show with Caroline Barker and the brand new Totally Scottish Football Show.
Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5pm till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.